that's so fun to hear again.
We're back.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello, and welcome to The Klatch. You're listening to The Klatch on KVSH.
101.9 FM.
Ready? We're back now. I don't know what happened there. Welcome.
Mercury is retrograde.
I know, we have to remember that, don't mm-hmm. we?
Is it really?
Yeah, really.
That you, makes sense.
You are listening to The Klatch, if you hadn't guessed, on KVSH, FMLP 101.9, Voice of Vashon, right here in downtown Vashon, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me in the studio are Heidi Skrypek.
Hi.
And Susan McCabe.
Hello.
Hi. Together, the three of us, sometimes known as the busiest mouths on Vashon, will discuss, laugh, cry, and pontificate on many subjects. Nothing's taboo here. Well, except those famous seven words we can't say.
Well, yeah.
I wish we could sometimes.
George Carlin words.
Sometimes yes. We slip. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you can pull up a chair and have a cuppa and listen as we wend our way through the next hour. Today we're going to be talking about, I guess how we can prepare ourselves for the inevitable. Mm-hmm. Namely, what details should we take care of before we leave the planet?
Yeah.
And what happens if we don't do anything?
There's that.
And what happens to our friends and to our family? Mm-hmm. So in that vein, we have a special guest who will phone in pretty soon, in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So we have a few minutes to get caught up with each other, but Chanel Reynolds has written a book called What Matters Most. And she's going to call in, and we're going to ask her 1,000 questions, and she's going to help us navigate this mystery of what to do before you go.
Yes.
Okay. I do want someone to come back and tell me what happens afterward.
Well, like, we're working on that.
What's it like to be dead?
Yeah. That's the next show.
That's our next guest. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone who's done that, let us know.
Give us a call.
We want to talk to you. Yeah.
So it's been a busy summer so far. I wanted to give a little shout out to Vashon Parks, excuse me.
Yeah.
And Pete Welsh and Allison, because mm-hmm. I went to Ober Park last Thursday and listened to Incendio, mm-hmm. and I had the time of my life, literally. I don't know. I should probably just be truthful about this.
Why?
I've never been
really
to Ober Park concert.
What?
As long as I've lived here. No, I just never really had any interest, and I don't know why, and now I have to go every time.
You can throw a stone from your apartment.
I was just
you can hear it from where I am, but it's not the same.
No.
You know, it's not the same. And
Wow. The
music was wonderful, and there were little kids, and there were old people, and there were couples, and there were single people, and all kinds. What I wanted to say about it is that even if you have to go alone, which is really why I didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go because I didn't want to go alone. It doesn't matter because you won't be alone once you get there.
No.
You'll either run into people that you know, or if you don't, you'll know somebody by the time you leave.
Oh, that's fun.
So true.
It was so fun. I loved it. So thank you, Vashon Parks.
Thank you, Pete and Allison.
It was really great. You're doing some pretty good work there, I think.
Well, and I also want to add Eric Wyatt to that.
Yes.
Oh, Eric. Yes.
Eric runs all the programs and budgets for all the programs in the park.
It's a great job.
Yeah.
And Laird Gaunter, too, who does the soundboard.
That's right.
Right.
And the stage now, as it turns out.
Oh, wow.
So
awesome.
I guess, you know, in getting ourselves kind of caught up here, I haven't been doing much else. I've been baking a little.
That's something.
Enjoying the fruit of the seasons.
Yeah.
And feeling really fortunate that we have such wonderful farmers.
We really
do. And an abundance of produce and fruit. Mm-hmm. The peaches are just killing me right now.
Ooh.
They're so good.
Reminds me of my childhood.
Ooh.
When I used to eat peaches until I was sick.
I know, you can.
I just loved them.
Yeah. And I was gifted a giant bag of figs the other day.
What?
Oh, my. I thought about, I'm going to make a fig tart, or I'm going to make membrillo, or na-na-na-na. And I got home, and it was like, well, I better eat that one. Oh, I better have that other one. And then pretty soon, I was like, well, that one looks like it might spoil if it sits there any longer. So day by day by day, they've disappeared, and there are only four left. So, you know, they're really good fresh like that.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you guys? What have you been doing? Heidi, what's going on with you?
Swimming.
swimming. Tell me, how was the swim on Sunday?
Sunday, we swam from Tahlequah, right next to Tahlequah, across Dalco Passage to Owen Beach, which is along the boardwalk from Point Defiance. And it was about 2 miles, just a little shy of 2 miles, with a very swift westward current.
There is a big current there. Was it 2 miles round trip or one way?
Just one way. And the goal is, even though the destination is straight ahead, you swim toward the the Tahlequah Ferry. Sorry, I can't talk. The Point Defiance Ferry. Across the water, yeah. Over to the left. So you're going at a 45-degree angle.
And, even though you're not.
But you keep, and it'll push you and twist your body to where you're pointed forward again, and then keep sweeping you toward Gig Harbor. So you keep, you have to sight every 8 strokes and put yourself back in that 45 degrees.
My gosh, it moves the ferry boat.
Well, right? Yeah, it does.
It does. Yes. That's a huge current.
So are you counting 8 strokes?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Toward the end especially, but it was weird because we started to step our way down to the beachfront, and there was this armada of kayak support kayakers that were coming up, and they were all coming sharply from the west, like Gig Harbor direction toward the beach and at an angle. And I was like, I wonder, did they just get like towed and dropped off?
Oh, what happened?
No, they did not account for the current.
Oh, so they got pushed.
And they ended up somewhere else.
So they were coming into the beach at an angle. And I went, and it just went, oh my God, it's because of the tide.
Yeah.
Eeks. They're in a boat with paddles and we're humans.
Wow.
It was smooth, flat, calm water, overcast like it is today. And no wind, no texture on the water whatsoever. So it made for a really nice sighting kind of condition where you're not, when it's sparkly and sunny, it can be really distracting. So it was very wonderful. We had tons of safety boats, extremely well organized and well run. And your Vashon swimmers represented, and Teo Eicher took first in his age group. Mary Singer took first in her age group.
Hey, Mary.
I took first in my age group. And then we had a lot of second places, too. We just hauled it in, man. We did well.
How many people swimmers?
70, I'd say 70 people swam.
Wow.
More were registered, but 70 showed up. Mm-hmm. And of those, 6 or 7 were Vashon. Yeah.
What organization sponsors this?
It is a master's swimming team out of Tacoma called Bernardo's All-Stars, and they work out at the Y in Tacoma. And the funds for the entry fee support the master's team. Yeah.
Heidi, nice. tell us about the 100-year anniversary.
Oh, coming in 2026 will be 100 years since they started this as a swimming event. It's not like it's gone consecutively, but the very first one was done in 1926. Alexina Slater was the first woman in that year to go across. She was with a group of men. It turns out, Bruce Hallman's history. He did a really nice deep dive in 2014.
Cute
pun. So I could see that was not intentional.
Yeah, no pun
That's
intended.
My brain is twisted. Thank you.
You're always deep diving, Heidi.
But so Alexina Slater was one of a group of swimmers that came across, and she was very applauded and did the Charleston on the pier.
Wow.
When she made it across, and it was a big deal. So. Yeah, and so they're excited because the centennial is coming up in 2 more years, and the event keeps growing and getting better and better. So that was what I did.
Fun. Yeah.
What are you going to do for an encore? Follow up that?
Not much, honestly.
You had a birthday.
I had a birthday.
Yes, you did.
I had a good birthday.
I had a great birthday. It was epic. I had epic friendships. I had epic cake, thanks to Linda Nygaard.
Woo-hoo.
And a concert with my friends and one of my favorite bands, Incendio. So I was able to see them and listen to their fabulous music and their musicianship. And it was a fabulous birthday. I couldn't have asked for anything more.
That's perfect.
Except maybe 20 years younger, but other than that, no.
You don't want to go back there.
No. You know, my
pieces
my,
of it,
my
maybe.
Dear departed friend, Kajwin Berry, when she was asked how old she was, would respond with, today I feel 18, or today I feel 45. She finally died at the age of 95, and then she was actually saying how old she was because she was so proud of it.
Oh, that's funny.
Basically, it's a number.
That is true.
Well, it is a number, but you know, the numbers get bigger.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can always hope they get bigger.
Yeah. If you're lucky, the numbers. And we'll be talking about that today, won't we?
Yeah.
Kind of. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, it is true. So, is our what are we doing for time here? Okay.
Very good. You know, I'm going to go ahead, if I may, and just sort of talk about what
I was going to ask you to do that and see, let us know a little bit more about Chanel and how you met. How did you meet her? How do you know
Chanel
her?
Is really cool. Okay. If she's listening, she's going to laugh. But I met Chanel at a party of mutual swim friends in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was with me, and she and my husband were talking about surfing, like blah, 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 blah. And I was like, who is that really cute girl flirting with my husband? She's not flirting. She's just friendly. That's Chanel. And I was like, cool. And I went over and met her, and I couldn't like be jealous of her. I liked her immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just hecka cool. I want to hang out with her. And David should go surf with her, and I can watch because I am a terrible surfer.
Are you?
You know, that surprises me.
It does me too.
I would expect you to surf.
I can surf. I'm just not good.
Oh.
I can surf. I can body surf really well.
I can do that.
Yeah. When I, so after meeting Chanel, we became friends on Facebook and linked up and saw her pictures. And then it wasn't long after that that she posted that she had published this book and she was going to do a book tour. And her book is called What Matters Most, and we talked about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Get Your Beep Together Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs. This is not a brand new book now. It was published a couple years ago, but I'm going to read you just a quick entry to it so that you have a sense of what the context is. And then we're going to talk to Chanel in just a minute. So on July 17th, 2009, Chanel Reynolds' husband, Jose, was struck by a van while cycling near their home in Seattle, and he died a week later. And just hours after the accident, Chanel realized she was completely unprepared for what came next. What was the password to his phone? Were their wills legally binding? How much insurance did they have? Could she afford the house? What the hell was probate anyway? Simply put, she did not have it together. And as it turns out, neither do most of us.
Mm.
We're too busy and too overwhelmed, or we don't know where to start. But here's the thing. You can't half-ass the important stuff, and hoping for the best is not a plan. Chanel learned this the hard way.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. So drawing on her firsthand experience and her expert advice and the unparalleled resources of her celebrated website, Get Your Together, Chanel offers an honest and no-nonsense guide that provides step-by-step practical advice on making your things easier, signing up your kid for a summer camp, easier than signing up your kid for a summer camp. So we'll talk about some of the elements that are in her book and the things she can walk you through and help you think about. There's some wonderful elements of this book that isn't just like a handy-dandy guide.
It's got, there's full of stories.
Yeah.
There are stories
in this
book.
That's the way
to
get the point across,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and it pulls you into the anguish. I mean, that was a word that kind of comes through for me, was like just anguish of, because you're dealing with like, well, he was on, spent a week kind of on life support.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
And then the relatives came in and, you know, there's that emotional layer. And then there's this other pragmatic layer of just the estate. Right. And what do you do? And how do you like, she didn't even eat. There was a point, and I could completely see myself being that person where you just forget to eat. You're just out of your mind trying to cope and you're shutting down.
Right.
And there's no room for grief at that point because you're busy and people are there and they're,
exactly.
And yet you are grieving.
The grief
you
comes
have to
in.
Keep,
yeah. You have to,
you
yeah.
have to grieve. Yeah. Well, I have some experience, really, with what happens when details are left undone. And it's not a pleasant situation to go through. I think it often leaves families and friends at loggerheads with each other.
Right.
I was reading something the other day about, I've been looking, trying to look up this quote. I think everybody probably knows it, but I can't find the origin of it. And it's, it ain't about the teacups. And, you know, it's not about the teacups. There is a certain sentimental value attached to the teacups, Aunt Marge's teacup or whatever. But that knowledge or that disagreement that you might have because somebody else got it and you wanted it is really about other stuff.
Sure. All those things trigger old familial relationships, unfinished business.
Unfinished business, really.
That then appears to be impossible to finish because the person who left is gone and can't help with that. But it, you know,
and you wonder if they're on the other side saying,
Nana, boo-boo.
Whatever the other side is.
You know, I have exactly the opposite experience. When my mother died, she had everything in order, and I think my cousin, God bless him, helped her.
She had everything
split between me and my sister, my only other sibling. We had an insurance policy, her checking account. Everything was split right down the middle. She didn't have a lot of material stuff left. We took the few things that we wanted, little pieces of jewelry, and gave the rest to an organization that had a garage sale with it all. And that was that.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It was so perfect. Easy. So beautiful.
Well,
yes.
Not that it was easy, but it was, you had a pathway at least.
Yeah, we didn't have to think about those things. All we had to think about was mom.
She dialed it in.
Yeah, she dialed it in.
How long ago was that, Susan?
Oh, man, that was 2006.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a long time ago. Yeah. Wow, 20 years almost. Yeah, I wish I had more good news about what I've experienced in that regard, but I don't.
Well, you know, and there are, in addition to our guest today, there are people on the island here who can help you.
Exactly.
And they've been around, I call them the death dinner people.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that.
Maybe 10 years ago they started having dinners where people could talk about death.
There's a book about that, too.
They offer this pamphlet called Five Wishes that you can fill out for your physician and your family members that says how you want to be treated when you're terminally ill or seriously ill or in an accident or on life support and all the other things that you want. Wish number one is the person I want to make my healthcare decisions if I'm not able. Wish number two is the kind of medical treatment I want or don't want. Wish number three is how comfortable I want to be.
Very.
As you're going out.
As you're on the way out.
Or after you're dead, I guess.
Well, that's pretty comfortable, I think. Yeah. Although we still haven't got anybody to tell us. Number four is how I want people to treat me. And there's a whole list of things. You can cross out what you don't want. And number five is what I want my loved ones to know about me. So it's sort of a
so you kind of write a story as a...
Well, there's not a lot of room for a story. You can add pages if you want to write a whole story.
I'd have to add some pages.
Yes, I'm sure you would. Yes. How do you want them to remember you? Yeah. What do you want them to know about you? And I think we have our guest.
Do we have our guest online?
Can you hear me, Chanel?
No. Hi, I can hear you.
Wow.
Perfect.
Hello. Hi, Chanel.
We're so happy to have you on the air. This is KVSH 101.9, Voice of Vashon, and you are on The Klatch. And we are so delighted to have you, Chanel.
Nice to meet you, Chanel.
So nice to be invited to join you and chat. Thank you so much.
Well, we have been talking about your book. We were talking also about the Five Wishes because there's a Death Cafe group here on the island and they're very active. And so they get people to talk about getting ready to go. And the Five Wishes document is a pretty easy planning document. I'm sure you're very familiar with that.
Yeah, Five Wishes has been used pretty widely all over the country. Doctors, hospices, hospitals, a lot of people are pretty familiar with it. And it has been pretty easy to follow, which is so great, right? Like if we've been avoiding having this conversation for decades, we might as well make the conversation as easy as possible, right?
Yes, and that document definitely does that. But so does your book.
Well, it does go there for sure. And, you know, talking about what you want is a great way to start. And also sometimes it's easier to start to just start the conversation with what you don't want, right? Like, I absolutely don't want mascara, or I absolutely want to be like buried or cremated or recomposed in my Elvis tribute artist. Like, start... start with the priorities or the easy things first. And, you know, with the advanced care directive that you mentioned, with the five wishes or other ones, there's prepare for your care, and there's ones that are free. So five wishes is a really great one, and it's very affordable. There are other free ones as well, state-specific, like many rules and laws. It's specific to the state. Probate and estate planning and some of those other ones can be a little specific to the state you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Chanel, can I ask you, because the five wishes, I don't think is a legal document. Maybe it is, but if it is not, then do we need to have a legal advanced care directive and a legal will? Is there anything else?
That's a great question. Yeah, so an advanced care directive, also called a living will by some people, is a legally binding document. It should absolutely be honored, your wishes, your documented wishes be honored, but also legally held and be legally binding. So if you say, for example, I absolutely want my partner to be the person to speak for me to my family or health professionals if I or when I cannot, that should be legally honored. And in fact, if you, let's say, are legally married or still legally married, but you want to save your partner, or you're no longer speaking to your legally married spouse. Most specifically, and you want your sister or your neighbor, you write that down, and then that is legally binding as well.
Okay.
It's in nearly every state, to make a document like more legally binding and watertight and bomb-proof, you do need to sign it. Actually sign it in front of two witnesses. They watch you sign it. They watched you sign it. It does not have to be notarized. It makes it more like self-proving, and it makes it sometimes a little bit less questioned if it's notarized. But if that's the barrier, like you've had your will in your inbox or it's printed and you're like, ugh, I just can't find a notary anywhere, or I can't get there after work. It doesn't have to be for it to be legally binding, even though most people, attorneys specifically, recommend you do it. Mm-hmm. It's not required.
That's interesting.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Linda, you had a question.
Chanel, I have a question about let's back up to when this was all new and very fresh for you. And you were lost in the mayhem of what do I do now and where are the numbers and, those simple little things that we don't think we need to know. How did you begin? Like, who helped you, and where was the start of your being able to make sense out of what to do next?
Yeah. Well, when my late husband was in an accident, I was at a friend's house with a 5-year-old, and, nobody plans for the worst thing to happen.
Right.
And I was a planner, even, like literally a project manager planner. So the half of the things that we had done, right, like gotten some life insurance and started to get our stuff together, felt in some ways to me life-saving. The things that we didn't do or didn't complete, so the will or the estate planning documents example is a real life one. It still makes my chest feel tight remembering at Harborview, the hospital, but like the hospital that the helicopter lands on, and realizing when I was asked if we had our affairs in order, more euphemisms, lots of euphemisms that weren't my favorite, I realized that they were completed and they were in my inbox as they had been for months unsigned. So while we did a lot of the work, it wasn't signed. So I didn't really know what I didn't know. And for a college-educated, native English-speaking, legally married project manager, extrovert person, I was in a deep, dark hole. And it took a long time for me to, have the energy to get through a day. I had a kid, a a young kid, a stepdaughter, you know, a dog that was peeing all over the house.
And
some days were like, some days I felt like I was killing it if I could get my kid to school on time and wear clean pants, right? Like, so there were some pants winning days. But the thing that I would say is, you know, there are the basic things that we all know we need to do, right? You know, we should write our passwords down. We should have an emergency contact list. We should know what insurance we have. We should write some of our legal wishes and plans down in advance. But those priorities are really going to change for some people, right? Like, as a solo parent, having a multi-layered backup plan and guardianship or temporary guardianship for my son as a solo parent was way more important to me and where I would put my energy than, you know, maybe some of the other things that would be important to other families. So while there is a long and exhausting list of things that we should do, I like to suggest that we don't go straight to the scarcity thinking model. And if you had an hour in your house before, like, the zombie apocalypse started or aliens landed, not five minutes, so you're running around looking for underwear, and not 5 days, so you're like, I'll get to it tomorrow, but 1 hour, what would be the most important things that you would want to have or keep or know or take with you? And start there.
Oh, cool.
Oh.
Yeah. I like this. It also kind of goes back to part of your book where you're writing, like, what's sort of those early questions, like, what's the most important thing to me, you know? It's those things. Maybe it's picking up the phone and saying, I love you, to somebody.
Exactly. Well, and you had asked a question about what did I do, who helped me, how did I kind of make it through? And while I did not have... you know, wealth, let's just say wealth management is not an immediate concern of mine, right? But I did have some resources for which I was grateful. My community and my friends and the people who would come over and walk my dog once or twice a day because I was, you know, screaming into a pillow in the closet was life-saving for me. And other people gave their expertise. I was able to see a therapist, a counselor, you know, every week for a year. And it's those things that made me feel like I could maybe make it to the other side. And when I felt like I had the ground better under me, which I'm talking two and a half years of, you know, just like getting through it, I wanted to just share what I knew to hopefully remove as much of, or at least some of, this kind of optional suffering or this extra confusion and overwhelm. Mm-hmm. Because when things go wrong, and, you know, fingers crossed for everybody that nobody gets the phone call the way I did, but we have near misses, we have scares, we have parents that are aging, and if or when life gets knocked sideways, my hope for myself and my future self and everybody is that there are fewer things to worry about or wonder about or not have some answers to, because this is the first time we're thinking about it. So is it fun to spend time saying, well, you know, specific example, my parents live out of the state that I live in. My father had been ill for a number of years, and it was a prognosis that was going to be managed as well as possible. There was not a recovery from it that was possible. And so for me, my getting my stuff together involved having a credit card with me at all times.
Mm.
So I could buy a plane ticket if and when I needed to. And so when we're talking about emergency planning, that might really mean different things for different people.
Okay.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier, Chanel, about the children and guardianship. If you are both parents and one dies, is it not automatic that the other surviving parent has guardianship legally?
And first of all, I'm going to say I'm not an attorney.
Right.
I'm not.
Yes.
Neither am I. Yeah. But that is very generally what happens. There are, mm-hmm. I'm sure, extenuating circumstances in many, many places. And the, you know, more on each other's side family members can be, the better that can go. People have blended families. People have step-parents or ex-step-parents. And mm-hmm. so for me, there was, as a then solo parent, if something were to happen to me and I died, I wanted to be very clear with my son about what would happen. Who would come live with him if he would go live with someone else? Would mm-hmm. he stay at the same school? Would he be able to keep his pets that he loved? So I wanted him to know. When kids will ask what happens if you die, parents are very frequently wanting to be reassuring and say, sweetie, nothing bad's going to happen to mm-hmm. me. In many cases, that's not reassuring to kids because we have news and phones, and we're like, well, you know, Sarah's kids down the street only have one parent, and I could not get away with that with my kids. So I wanted to be really clear with him what the plan was if something were to happen to me. And then what would happen if something happens and there were two parents in an accident and they both lived, but mm-hmm. maybe there was a recovery time. Maybe you're in the Grand Canyon for 2 weeks and there's no cell coverage. Maybe you're taking care of an elderly parent and just getting there in 10 minutes isn't going to be easy. So there's temporary guardianships. I had another single parent friend, and we were each other's emergency contact, and we were each other's temporary guardian. So for up to a week, we could have the other kid because the kids were at each other's house all the time anyway. and still a grandparent or somebody else could arrive. So, you know, it's a little bit of just, you know, what would happen if something happens and it stays like that for a weekend. You know, we live in earthquake country, bridges are out, ferries stop running, that kind of thing. What would happen if something happened and that kept happening for another few weeks and there was a, you know, some big questions about, you know, your schedule can't be counted on. And then, you know, what would happen if something happened and that was the way it is now? Like, what would you want to have in place? Whether it's guardianship, whether it's extra life insurance, whether it's just clarifying that you absolutely want your sister to be able to have guardianship, but if your sister divorces the person that they're married to, you never liked them to begin with, and your sister is the one.
That's where it all gets complicated. I'm still a little confused. This is Susan, about the whole issue with stepchildren. So if a family is blended and the natural child to the two parents is living in the household and the stepchild to one of the, to perhaps the parent that dies is also living in the house, what about the remaining parent of that child, the ex to the parent that might die? In other words, does guardianship go to the blood parent regardless of whether that child is happy in the blood parent's home?
Yeah, so this is where I used to get really annoyed with anytime I'd ask an attorney a question, and usually the first thing they would say is, it depends. But in some... it's not wrong. Now, not being an attorney, I'll tell you, in my situation as a step-parent to a wonderful younger child who is now a wonderful young woman, I didn't have a legal relationship to her anymore. So there's legal rights and then there's parental rights. Very frequently, a child or children will be placed or replaced or go live with or whatever it might be, their biological or legal parents. That's not always the case, and families can come up with lots of really great plans or blended plans or grandparents or whatever it might be. But very frequently, if there's a living parent or one living parent, legal parent, that's often, but perhaps not always, who the child will go live with, or that person then retains their custodial rights.
Makes good sense.
Yeah.
Well, and there is an age at which children, and I think it varies state to state, where children can choose where they want to live. And I believe in this state it's 12 or 13.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that if what the parents decided wasn't something they wanted to do, they have the power to make that choice themselves. Is that correct?
You know, I'm going to say I've heard stories like that in the case of parents divorcing or perhaps a death in the family. But I believe that while that could be the case or has been the case, it might often be a case-by-case type thing as
yeah.
well. But yes, I have heard of many stories of situations like that.
Chanel, I wanted to say thank you. This book was great for me, and I got started kind of at the beginning when you're clearly grieving. As you know, the first few chapters of this book, it feels to me like you're under glass and you're just so stuck in grief. I felt it, like it was palpable. Mm. And I thought, damn, I don't want to end up like that. But also I felt so, I just felt so much sympathy for you and what you're going through. But you did a really wonderful job in that of talking about the things you didn't have, like passwords, eeks, you know. And it made David and I sit down and just go on a major password-a-thon where and I work in public relations and copywriting, so you have to imagine I have like 300 passwords. But I went through it, you know, just thought there's the banking stuff too. And we went and made each other signatories on our accounts, which we weren't before. And this is all because of this book. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
It really made a difference. And it took us forever to get around to doing the advanced directive and the medical power of attorney and blah, blah, blah. So we did lawyers, but I'm so glad we did it because you helped sort of steer us in that direction. And we did it with the help of an attorney, the Sayers on the island. And I'm just so happy it's finally done. You have to excuse my voice. I have asthma and it gets a little goofy sometimes with this medicine I'm taking.
No,
it's also allergy season.
Yeah.
I want to just ask you. Will you walk us through your own big giveaway? Because it's this end chapter, it's this little section in your book, and so often people are mired in the stuff.
In the stuff.
And the parceling of the stuff. And this is a wonderful preemptive thing to do before you even kick the bucket. So will you walk us through that, please?
Sure, definitely. Well, one of the things I realized when I got through my own stuff and kind of felt like I had the ground underneath me again was I would get calls a lot from people with parents who are maybe aging out of living independently. And one of the things that almost always happened in a conversation in the first 5 minutes is I don't know what to do with all the stuff. Yeah. Like there's stuff in the garage, there's stuff in the basement. What do I do with the National Geographic from the 70s? When I was going through my late husband's things, it was everything from I need to save this precious thing to the kids to what do I do with all the socks, right? Like there's just stuff everywhere. And then now that my life is different and I wanted to be unencumbered from the, you know, responsibility of having things, that I had to buy more things to put those things in to organize the things, what do we do? What's most important? So I, in addition to hearing a great story from my mother when her mother died, my grandmother, she had these lots of things and there was a big giveaway. There were post-it notes underneath any statue or vase or plant you would find in the living room. And they would just go through lots of, here's four things in a pile, everyone pick one, or these things go together. So for me, when I was moving or just changing the amount of stuff I had, my giveaway was, you know, I didn't want to sit around having a garage sale. And it wasn't really an estate sale. So I just gave my things to people who might find new ways to love them. You can put pictures out online, on Facebook, do a private group. You can have people come over to your house and serve them coffee and donuts and have a giveaway. And my my goal was to get out from under the stuff and the things. And if I ever needed that articulated ladder back, I knew who had it, and I could ask them to bring it over.
I like that.
So I could use it one time. Yeah.
Boy, that makes the concept of downsizing into a party.
Yeah.
Just open the doors and say, take it all. I like that
idea. Take it all, exactly. And then if you're feeling any kind of, you know, like, graspy or longing or clinginess to it, which I have to admit I did a little bit, even for my aspirational Buddhist ideals, I was like, but I might want that chair back, okay? So if I do... But all of these years later, dozens plus years later, I've asked for none of the items back.
Okay.
Even though it keeps me connected to people and it keeps things going to new homes that would love them. So it was a wonderful way to give away and get more space back in my life.
As
soon as there was more space and more things, less things, more space, I could really felt like I could breathe a little bit.
Did you do that? Did you do that over a period of time, or did you have, you know, one or two events, or how did you do that?
I did it in a couple of different ways. A wonderful friend encouraged me to not do too much right away, just to be able to sit with some things, because I didn't know, you know, I think it's probably the emotional or the item version of don't make any big financial decisions for the first year. I let things sit. And then there were a few bursts, like I put some special things away in boxes and knew that I wanted, let's say, my late husband Jose's desk. Anything that was on his desk, I just put as a little time capsule, kept it together so 10 years from now the kids could feel closer to him. And that felt really special. When it came to the socks, those went straight to the Goodwill.
But it took a few years.
One version, if you don't want to deal with having people over to your house, which is absolutely understandable, even under the best of circumstances, just take pictures of things and send it out to a group and see who says, I love that, kind of like your own private buy nothing group. Or have people over and put stuff in the yard or however you want to do it and make it... maybe even just like a little bit of a celebration and a way to connect and reconnect or stay connected to those people in your life who you want to be around.
I want to ask you if we can back up for 1 second and talk about the emergency fund. We've kind of talked about all the other pieces, but not the fund. So what would that cushion look like?
Yeah, so most advice you would get from a financial advisor would be every adult should have 6 months or more of your basic expenses in a liquid, so not tied up in your 401k, a liquid account that isn't too convenient to get to, but is available in case something happens. Now, studies have consistently shown that over 40% of U.S. adults don't have $1,000 in cash in case of an emergency. So we absolutely understand that very few of us have the ability or can or have the option to even consider the option of having 6 months of your expenses parked in a high-yield savings account just waiting in case you need it.
Dare to dream.
However, dare to dream, right? And if you can, that's great. And what an emergency fund allows for are those moments where your car engine blows up and that's how you need to get to work. In my case, my emergency fund took the form of a credit card I had room on so I could get a plane ticket to go visit a family
that
member.
That works.
If and when I needed to. It also, as a safety precaution for losing a job or, oh, let's say something crazy like a global pandemic happens and you're
not that.
That you never thought would never be like insecure
that
all of a sudden
true.
Was. So,
sure.
So ways to make it through rough patches or unexpected patches. And again, it can be really challenging for many people to have extra money aside, but and waiting, but it is a great priority. And because I had a very little in savings and a small emergency fund at the time when my late husband was killed, It made the financial overwhelm and scarcity even more terrifying. So as I've come to be, a solo parent, not just a single parent, but a solo parent, I really prioritize trying to create as much of a financial buffer or options buffer, because the finances are meant to create options. Less scarcity, more stability.
True.
So if or when something would happen to me, like I would get sick and I couldn't work, or my son and I could have some stability, and there are ways that we could make arrangements with other parents in the neighborhood. We can, go back to or reconsider multi-generational living with other people. It doesn't have to be everyone has their own little pile of money squirreled away that we don't help or share with, but
that is
something we're to have. It would be great if we all had piles of money.
I mean, that's a second show that we should talk about together. Because it's a myth, like that whole nuclear family, four people to a home and two incomes.
2.2 kids.
That's a myth. That is not the world we're living in. My mother lives with us and it's kind of awesome. And we have someone else that rents the house that's on our property adjacent in our cottage. And it's working great. And it helps the renter and it helps us. So I totally hear you, Chanel.
Yeah, and, I think that's a wonderful example. Example.
A lot of what you're talking about, too, sounds to me like community.
Yeah.
Like building a community and trusting in your community, building a community that you can trust, that you can share your vulnerabilities with. In this culture, we have a tendency to say, oh, if you have a problem or a vulnerability, you're weak. But the fact is, those are the things that bring us together. And it sounds to me when you talk about what to do when the worst happens, it has a lot to do with who can you rely on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The fact that I had somebody who could pick my son up, who was on my pick up or drop off list at school, that's an emergency plan that I needed. And, I come from the Midwest and I firmly believe in all of those feelings should be squashed down inside of you as
yes.
far as possible.
And do not talk about it.
Wait, where are you from, Chanel?
No. I grew up in Minneapolis.
I grew up outside Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah. So, I grew up not actively, but perhaps passively not talking about my feelings. And when something comes and bowls you over, the artifice of all of those things was just gone. I could have tried to pretend that I was fine, but on my face, it was like I was walking around with no skin for years.
It blew me
hard, so hard that there was no not asking for help. And while it took a little practice asking for help or accepting it, I needed it so badly, and it made me feel better, and it made the people who wanted to help feel like they could do something.
Yes. That's what I was going
to
say.
To them, too.
We learn that when we learn how to ask. I had an experience that put me in a situation where I had to ask for help, and it's hard. But then you realize you're doing something, somebody else is getting goodness out of that as well. It makes someone else feel like they can help, like they matter. Maybe they can lessen your load just a little bit.
Absolutely. And it does matter, even if it's walking your dog.
Exactly.
Or doing a drop-off or taking your kid to the Lego store and telling them that they could get any Lego they wanted, not realizing that the Millennium Falcon is like a 47-hour job. But nonetheless, it really, really, really... really, really helped.
Assembly required. In all your grief after something like this happens, the life continues to demand, and you need somebody you can hand some of those demands off to. And I think that's where your friends and your loved ones come in, whether they're blood family or family of choice, to help you respond to those demands that aren't going to stop just because something bad happened.
Chanel.
Exactly.
So now that it's been 15 years since you lost your husband and you're looking back, are you living that life that you had written in your Finding Shore chapter of your book where you're really balancing it out and doing what's important. How's it going?
What a good question. I mean, I would love to say that I figured it all out, but I feel really, you know, when something like that comes along, and we all have or will likely experience something close to this, like your DNA is a little altered and you just can't go back to the old life. There's no time machine. And so I've made different choices than I maybe would have before. And the first few years, it looked like getting some tattoos and a motorcycle and learning how to surf. And I will say that might not be everyone's first choices, but it was important to me in my healing process to feel alive and that I could do things. Like the rest of my life wasn't going to be a widowed solo parent, and that was only who I was for the rest of my life. But I've chosen more of experiences and more joy. I've tried to prioritize joy and experiences and community over maybe some of the other things that felt more safe or more secure in the past, but don't necessarily feel like that there aren't any givens and there aren't any promises. So I've, you know, now starting this widow journey and trying to get my shit together, or realizing the ways that I didn't have my shit together before, I've made really good choices and a few questionable ones, probably. But if something were to happen, rather, there would be very few questions about where my passwords were. My closest friends have access to my information. My son knows that there's a life insurance policy. Each Mother's Day, he asked me if I'm still keeping that current.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it feels life will never be the same, and it will never not suck so much that these kids don't have their dad to be at their graduation parties. Yeah. And we've all done our very best, and I think that our family has made its way through the storm.
How is your son now, Chanel?
He's great. He's in the kitchen making funny faces at me.
Is he?
he's lovely. And, you know, he has now had more of his life without a dad than with one. And
right.
So we keep him alive in memories and stories, and sometimes he doesn't feel like talking about it, and sometimes he does. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're all deeply, deeply grateful that we had that wonderful person in our lives for as long as we did. Mm. And it still sucks that he doesn't get to be here to see his kids grow up either. Mm-hmm. But we're grateful that we had him.
You don't get over it. You find a place for it.
Exactly. Like, people don't expect you to get over the loss of a parent or a sibling.
Right.
It's no different for a partner, you know, that's he's still with us as we have moved forward.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure there are a lot of ways when they stay with us. There are a lot of examples of how they stay with us.
So for anyone just tuning in, we're listening to Chanel Reynolds, who has phoned in. She's the author of What Matters Most and has founded this wonderful, we can't actually say this word on the air, but it's okay that Chanel did, but it's the Get Your Eek Together.
Your stuff.
We'll say the Irish way, shite together.
Shite.
Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs. Chanel, tell me, get your shite together sold somewhere officially, correct?
Yeah, so it's been a couple different iterations. So the first version of the website was me and my story saying, here's what happened, here's what I learned, here's what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
That, when it launched, quickly took off and went everywhere. The site crashed and it was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm doing. There was a second company that was acquired, so you're right, and then right around the time the book came out in 2019. And so that has been a wonderful transition into teaching and writing and consulting and helping communities or families or large companies figure out how to better support themselves, their employees. So if and when something happens that there aren't so many questions and the hundreds of hours of tasks, administrative tasks, probate tasks, documents, trying to find things, hopefully can go down to a few dozen rather than a few hundred.
Should we send people to your ChanelReynolds.com website, or should we send them to GYST?
Send them to ChanelReynolds.com, and that will flip you over to the website we can't say to get your stuff in error code.
And it's for everybody listening, it's ChanelReynolds.com.
Chanel. Awesome. Yeah. Name.
Chanel, I am so indebted to you for taking time out with us, and we could keep going. This is probably a good stopping point, but I am so grateful that you joined us this afternoon.
Thank you, Chanel.
It's wonderful to be invited.
It's been a pleasure.
It's really been fun, Chanel, and thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to reading the book. I haven't read it yet, and I look forward to that. So, and I think we are out of time right now, so...
Farewell, Chanel. We'll meet you again. I'll see you in the water.
Thank you, listeners. And we will see you next time.
Bye, Chanel.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Chanel.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, how do you do? Are you ready? Are you ready for your final plans?
You know, it gave me a lot to think about. We have a lot to think about and a lot to do. You know, I've been working on mine for a long time, and I am the world's champion procrastinator.
Master procrastinator.
So what keeps you from finishing it?
I keep changing my mind about stuff.
Oh.
You know, there's, I'm almost done. I'm almost done. I've got the person named. I've got the wish list done. And now it's passwords and numbers and that non-creative stuff that I don't like. And I have to do that now. So I will do that. And I made myself a commitment when we were talking about this the other day, that I'm going to have it done by the time the next clatch is on.
That's really good.
All right, we will check in with you.
Please do. I need a policeman in my life.
There will be a quiz.
The next clatch will be, what, the second Tuesday of September?
Of September.
Yes.
Yeah. What, I don't know what that date is.
Whatever
that
date is.
I don't have a calendar right here, but it will be then.
Whenever that faithful date is.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can tell us a little bit about, what kind of memorial service you want.
Oh, I don't want one.
Do you want to be rubbed with warm oils?
No, I don't want to be rubbed with warm oils, but I do
while
want,
you're in hospice?
If I'm in hospice, I want my feet rubbed.
Oh, that's not a bad thing.
That's sure.
But skip the oil on the body thing.
Ixnay on the oily. oil of olay. September 10th, by the way, is our next show.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm going to be in Croatia.
I knew you were going to be gone.
Sorry, not
Nana Nana Boo Boo.
You know, my granddaughter is in Croatia as we speak, on her way to Albania, just having returned from Germany.
And you will get to swim in the Mediterranean Sea, which
Adriatic.
Is
so fun.
The Adriatic, yes, which is soft. Everything is soft about it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I will be on my way to Italy.
Oh, my gosh.
So we won't have a show on September
10th. You're the
show.
I'll be
here September 10th, but then I'm out of here.
Yeah.
You are the show, Lyndon.
Oh, no
it's
doubt.
True, you are
no.
the show.
Well, I think we should wind it up here. We're just right down to the minute.
Weasel winding. We're going to see if we can find our music.
Yeah, our music's on there somewhere. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you on September 10th.
Oop, oop. This is KVSH 101.9 FM.
Your
bye-bye for now.
Connection.
Oh, that's so fun to hear again.